So you mentioned that we wanted to discuss a few points from 29 about Kamadhenu cows and Lakshmis, because the verse talks about Kamadhenu. And we, a few days ago, we discussed about the Kamadhenu cow of Vishishtamuni and Vishramita, who was amazed by the services. Of course, the end of that story was that he wanted to get that cow. I mean, excuse me, Vishramita wanted to get that cow, so he stole that cow, or he came to steal the cow. He wanted to steal the cow of Vishishtamuni. So he went and made plans. But then the cow, being very smart, when Vashishta was walking by, he said, "Hey, Amuni, that king that was visiting here that you serve so nicely, he's making plans to steal me, so watch out." So then Vashishta said, "No problem." So Vishwamrita mounted a huge army and he attacked the ashram of Vashishta to steal that Kamadhenu cow. But he was defeated by the Brahman Tejas of Vashishta Muni. So then Vishwamrita came and said, "I'm a great Kshatriya and powerful king with so many soldiers. You're one person. How were you able to defeat me?" And he said, "Because I have Brahman Tejas. You're a Kshatriya, but I'm a Brahman. I have Brahman Tejas." And he said, "Oh, I want to get that Brahman Tejas also." Then he said, "Oh, well, you have to do some tapasya and you have to shave your head and chant 16 rounds a day." And no, you have to become a Muni, because you're a Maharaj, but you have to become a Muni Maharaj, now you're a king, but you have to become a Rishi. So, all right, he did. And he, under the tutelage of Vishishta Muni, he did whatever you do to, he went to Rishi school or something, and then he became a Muni. Everyone knows the story, Vishwamrita Muni. But because his background was rather Rajasic, being a king, he was like passionate, and so he wasn't too fixed on the Brahman platform. So Prabhupada often quotes him as an example of the yogi who couldn't keep it, keep it together. Because Indra became a little envious of his tapasya that Vishwamrita was undergoing for 60,000 years. So then Indra sent one of his concubines, Menaka, I believe it was Menaka. And Menaka, she came and kind of just went ching, 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 you know, with her bangles and their foot bells. And Vishwamrita, although he was such a great yogi and muni, let's say converted to one, he became attracted to Menaka's charms, and he left the path of yoga there and fell down from the path. Anyway, that was just kind of the addendum to the story of Vishramita Muni. But so Vrindavan, there are these Kamadhenu cows which yield all desires, just like couple of riksha trees. But when the gopis, when they milk these cows, all they want is milk to offer more and more milk sweets to Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Pad is explaining about the opulence in Vrindavan. He says that the goshalas of Nandagram have pillars made of crystal. This is in Brajavriti Chintamani. He describes, because this verse, this Chintamani Dham, is describing something about the wonderful opulence of Vrindavan, which is decorated with kalpavriksha trees and Kamadhenu. So there's no shortage of opulence there in Aishwarya, which is quite prominent and prevalent in Vaikuntha, with Lakshmis and Narayans. But the residents of Vrindavan, although they're surrounded by all this opulence, and they live in opulent palaces, and the goshala, can you imagine the barn? And we say in English, the barn, the cow barn, where the cows are, the goshala, they have the pillars, usually in the West, the pillars are made of logs or wood or steel I-beams or something, you know, like our houses around here. But in Nandagram, the palaces of the goshalas had crystal pillars, and that's not exactly cheap. It's a pretty costly thing. So the point is that they're surrounded by all this opulence, but their life is very simple. It's just Naralila. And although they have these, it's described that their palaces and their goshalas have crystal pillars and lapis lazuli walls, still outside the gopis go like this with a cow dung, and they make patties and they slap them up on the side of the wall of the goshala, on the lapis lazuli. You know, they don't think, oh, this is lapis lazuli. It's a very, you know, expensive type of semi-precious stone. Or these are crystal pillars. Oh, this is a good pillar. You know, so they put their cow dung there. Like now you see people, they put their cow dung on walls of houses and telephone poles and sides of cars, you know, abandoned cars. They put their cow dung patties on them. I've seen. And then they fall off. It looks like an interesting decoration. Take a white ambassador and cover it with cow dung patties and then let it dry and take it off and drive around town. You have this interesting pattern of, you know, circles all over your car. And people would ask you, where you got that incredible design? Designer, you know, ambassador. So, although there's all this opulence, it still maintains its intimacy and its sweetness of just a little boy, you know, rolling in the dirt, and there's still dirt there, and the Brajaraj is there, and the Kamandanas are there, and everything's there. But the sweetness far surpasses the grandeur and the opulence, whereas in Vaikuntha there is also sweetness in relationships. There is Sakiras and Vatsaliras and Madhuriras, but the grandeur and the pomp and the opulence and the Aishwarya of it all overshadows and takes precedence over the sweetness of the rasas exchanged by the resonance with each other and with the Lord. Whereas here in Vrindavan and Braja Gokul, the Aishwarya is simply a background. It's just a setting that's kind of there, but people pay more attention to Kadamba trees and Yamuna water and cow dung patties and water pots and flute sounds and peacock feathers and Gunjamala. They pay more attention to those things. When Krishna is decorated by Yashoda and Dinishta and Kalimba and Ambika and different mandris that are assisting in his dressing in Nandagaon, they put on so many Indranila necklaces, blue sapphire necklaces and pearl necklaces and golden chains and necklaces and so many things, very opulent jewelry and gemstones. And then because his mother is a queen, Brajarani, Yashodarani, and the queen of Nanda, King Nanda, so he should look proper, like a prince, and he does. He looks like a gallant, opulent prince when he goes out. But as soon as he gets out to the pasturing grounds, his friends, his sukkas, like Subal, Sridham, and others, they know what Krishna really likes. So they have Kadamba garlands, and they have Gunjamala, and they have some, you know, garlands with peacock feathers. There's some flowers and a couple of peacock feathers. So they say, Krishna, we made these nice garlands for you. And sometimes, of course, the sakis often make those garlands and present them to the boys to give to Krishna. And Krishna says, oh, yes, I want those. And he takes out these pearl necklaces and these gold necklaces and throws them on the ground. And he puts on a peacock feather necklace or a flowered, you know, a gunjamala or some kadamba flowers. And he considers this is the greatest opulence, to be decorated with the natural gifts of the trees and latas of Vrindavan. And so what happens to all those necklaces? All those pearl necklaces and golden necklaces? Well, the monkeys come and play with them sometimes. Monkeys come and take the pearls and they just pull them apart and eat them and chew on them and throw them around and stuff because they're playful. But also other people come and pick them up and then they use those for their livelihood. At least that's what it's described. So that is the little bit about the Kamadenos. They just, all they want is more milk. They give us more milk so we can make nice milk sweets for Krishna. And the Lakshmis, here it says, Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam, that he's surrounded by so many hundreds of thousands. So that Vishnu says that the 100,000 mentioned, Sahasra Sata, these are the eternally perfect gopis. But there are actually hundreds and millions of unlimited numbers of gopis and servants in the spiritual world. Somehow or other, from the Acharya's viewpoint, Krishna's Nitya Parishads, they ascribe some number to them, that there's 100,000 which are being referred to in this verse. Sahasrashata. Sahasrashata, I think sahasra means 1,000 and shata must mean, you know, 10 times that or whatever. 10 lakhs. So that means, it means 100,000 are eternally perfected gopis that are Nitya Siddha, part of Krishna's parishads. But then there's so many millions and unlimited more that are there. And each Sakhi has her own Sevakunj, forest bower, and she has her own personal loving relationship with Krishna, and due to his unlimited, inconceivable expansions. So just to summarize this verse, and then we have ask questions if there are any, and go to 30. What Brahma is telling here is that in Braj Gokul, Krishna Lok, there is no use of Kalpavriksha trees, Chintamani gems, or Kamadhenus at all. There the cows give only milk, the trees give only flowers. Krishna needs nothing from Chintamani. Even the dust of Vrindavan can give anything you like, but there's no use. Nobody has any desire at that place except to love and serve Krishna. All the trees are Kalpavriksha trees, but no one has any other desire than Krishna Prema. So there's no use in taking anything else to fulfill a desire from these trees, ground and cows, etc. They're happy to take the leaves and flowers and fruits and milk and to walk in the dust and decorate their faces with the dust. And as we heard, the gopis, they make jewelry out of the gemstones. The Chintamani gems, they make toe rings from them. So any questions about that? Verse 29. It's just some description of the spiritual world. Of course, it also describes the Vrindavan we're living in. But to see all these things, that we're in Prakat Vrindavan, but that's Aprakat. So until one is touched by Vishuddha Sattva, then he cannot actually see Aprakat Vrindavan. People like Kabadananda Saraswati Thakur, they are situated in Vishuddha Sattva, pure goodness, as Prabhupada translates it. Spiritual energy. Their eyes are anointed with the dual potencies of Ladini and Samvit, so they can see Vrindavan as it really is. And they describe it in Vrindavan Mahimamrita in very extraordinary and astounding ways, as does Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Gita Mala, I believe. It says that there's ruby trees, there's ruby trees with ruby leaves and diamond flowers. They're really there, and there are trees that, and there's emerald trees with coral flowers, flowers that are made of coral. I mean, there's also regular trees, but there's these kind of gemstone trees, and really extraordinary trees. In our Radhakund book, we describe there's some translations of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's bhajans where he describes the banks and shores of Radhakund. And he uses all these kind of terms. It sounds like a jewelry store or something. Some costly jewelry store. There's emerald trees with diamond surrounded by crystal basins. There's like a crystal platform below the tree, and the tree has an emerald trunk. And the flowers, it sounds something like Alice in Wonderland. Or Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. If you know what I mean. I mean, it's quite extraordinary, visionary, extra visionary darshan of the Holy Dham. But it's really like that. So that was 29 verse, which is Chintamani Dham.